From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made the last time you sent someone a text message. We're wondering, how quickly did you get a response? And how quickly do you expect to get a response? And now let's flip it around on ourselves. Here's the central question we're considering this hour. What is the socially acceptable amount of time that you have to respond to a text, to respond to an email, and to respond to a voicemail? We asked our friends on social media that question, and wow, the responses are fascinating. Older listeners tell us they are frustrated that younger adults won't even listen to voicemails anymore, let alone respond to them. Younger adults say flat out, stop leaving us voicemails. Just text us. Here's one example out of dozens that we've received. Patrick, 27 years old, says that he'll give 3 to 5 hours to respond to a text, 2 to 4 business days for an email, and for a voicemail, he says never. Don't leave people voicemails. Other listeners tell us they've had to train their own parents to stop leaving voicemails because no one wants to hear them. Wow. Well, there is some pushback to that and some variation in how long people think it's acceptable to take to respond to various forms of communication. It reveals a change in how we communicate now and what we expect from one another. If you've ever felt anxiety over a text that you didn't respond to, or an email you left dormant, maybe every time you scroll through your inbox, you see that email and you're like, oh, I really have to respond. But then, let's just be honest. Once you get past a certain point, the socially acceptable thing to do is pretend that you never got it, and then hope that you never see that person again. Just cut off communication entirely. That's just the rules. I don't make them up. Or maybe I'm wrong here. Let's talk about the way we communicate and how things have changed with our guests. And here's a name that you hear on the other side of the glass. Our outstanding connections intern is also a communications and history student at NAS and co-owner of Floated Magazine, Emma Ray Stein. Nice to see you in the studio. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Evan.
Also with us is Anna Gomez Parga, assistant professor in English at Communication at Nazareth College. Welcome to you.
Thank you.
And with us is Elise Miklich, who is a communication specialist at RIT and owner of Light Within Candle Company. Elise, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Happy to be here.
Rashad Smith is project manager for Shaping Our Stories at Causewave Community Partners. Welcome to you.
Evan, thanks for having me.
I want to say that I think all of you got back to us pretty quickly when we reached out to you, probably via email, though maybe via text. How did we get you by email? Yeah? And you all got back right away?
Yeah, it was through email.
Through email.
Yeah. I actually got email and DM.
And a DM.
Okay. I did send a DM there, yes.
So this has been, for me, really funny to read the almost 100 responses so far to our question for the audience just on social media about what is socially acceptable. And I could just sit here reading them and probably laughing. I think my favorite one was someone said they sent a friend a text about, do you want to get dinner tonight? 2 weeks later, they got a response saying, sorry, I'm busy. So let's go around the table here. Let me give some short answers, and then we're going to dig into what they mean, because I know there's a little more nuance here. But what are the short answers, generally speaking, text, email, voicemail, how long you think you have to have a socially acceptable amount of time to respond? Emma Ray.
So for a text, I generally think that it's something that's personal, I would say. So I feel like there's a little more lenience into how long I can respond. I usually give myself within the day, but I also would consider myself someone who answers things rather quickly comparatively to some people. In email, it also depends on the importance. If someone's, you know, asking me for a favor or something like that, I would say between 1 to 2 days, I would say, is the max, 2 days generally. And then for a voicemail, which I rarely receive anymore, I don't even think I listen to them. I usually just call the number back.
Yeah.
Emma Ray, can I ask how old you are?
I'm 19.
Okay, so you really don't get voicemails, and you usually think if someone has left you a message, do you think it's spam, or do you think there was a mistake?
Well, I don't think that it's spam, because generally I haven't had a spam person leave me a voicemail, okay. But I usually think it's a doctor's appointment or something like that, so I'll just call it back, because that's the only reason I get voicemails.
When is the last time you think a friend of yours, roughly your age, actually left a voicemail?
My best friend leaves me voicemails often with comical stories or something like that, uh-huh. So I'll listen to those, because I know they're going to be funny and
amazing. So that's kind of something you guys do.
That's just a thing that we do. But if she wanted to hang out or something, she would just send me a text.
So the answer is close to never.
Close to never, yeah.
Okay. All right. Anna Gomez Parga, what's the answer on, let's go text, then email, then voicemail?
Okay, I'm going to go with my personal stories here, not as a scholar, because obviously it depends. But for me, text is almost immediately, for me at least, especially because I know the people who would text me versus the people who would not. Email, I would say probably a day, two max. And voicemail, never. Like, I was just talking to Emery about these, and actually my message says do not leave a voicemail because I will not listen to it.
Why? So,
I don't know. It's just...
What if family?
No, my family knows.
They know, but they've been trained.
Yeah.
They've been trained. Okay. Elise?
I am very similar. I'm usually really, really quick on text, but that's how I like to stay in contact with the people that I'm closest to. For email, I am usually quick. I have a 5-minute rule that if it takes longer than 5 minutes to respond, then I'll set it aside. And if it takes less than 5 minutes to think about it, then I'll respond right away, but generally within 1 to 2 days. Voicemail, I only get voicemails from my doctor's office.
So, again, you don't have anyone in your peer group who will leave you a voicemail?
No.
That is close to the rotary phone level of usage in modern society. Rashad, what's the answer?
For me, the voicemails are not necessarily doctor's appointments. They're bill collectors calling me. And so
definitely don't want to answer those.
I never answer those. Yeah, it's student loans. They're leaving messages. Don't forget your payment, that kind of thing. And I just really automatically press delete. For text messages, it's like an automatic thing. However, though, with voicemails, I do have a group of friends. We may share comical stories.
Okay.
Or just to really hear the voice. Like, we're all busy, and so we'll say, I'm just leaving a message so you can hear my voice. See ya. But text messages and emails, those for me in my line of work are instant. Like, I need to be responsive immediately. I think the longest that I've gone without answering an email is probably like a day. And then I'm typically responding maybe at midnight even.
That's very impressive, I've got to say, because one of the great sources of stress in my life, and I'm sort of dreading saying this because there are probably people listening going, yep. You have not responded to my email or my text. One of the great sources of stress for me is scrolling through the email inbox, because right now I have 1,900 emails in my inbox, and that's sort of a normal amount. It's a little more than normal. I try to keep it around 1,000. And I have had moments where producer Megan Mack has walked into my office, and she's like, what are you doing? And I'm like, I'm mass deleting in rapid fashion. And she's like, oh my gosh, I'm getting so much anxiety. You can't do this. And I'm going, I don't know what to do anymore. These are months old. I have to let it go. But then I feel terrible. But it could take me days to respond. You're on it every night.
Yeah, I have to be. It's my line of work.
I have to be better. I need to be like you.
Yeah.
So I want to actually apologize to anyone listening who is really upset with me for those reasons, because I am trying to do better. And we try to communicate with listeners who just send us notes or ideas. Somebody sent me some great information on migraine treatment yesterday. I sent a note back saying thank you. So we try, but it can be... How many emails are in your inbox right now?
Right now. So here's the other thing. I have about 6 email accounts. And
God,
so,
man. Wow.
And I think that might be somewhat of the norm here today with our guests. But I think to your credit, though, Evan, you receive 500-600 emails a day. I don't receive that.
It's a lot, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, it's a lot.
Yeah.
How many emails are in your inbox right now?
It depends. I also have multiple inboxes.
Yeah. So
I would
roughly,
say for my professional, I would say roughly unread 40.
40. 40 feels like, oh my gosh, if I could ever get down to 40. Oh my gosh. How many for you, Anna?
Around 60.
Oh my gosh.
But again, I mean, we have different accounts.
I guess I'm the oldster here. Elise, what about you?
I'm kind of with you. This is on my personal, though, including promotions. So that's around like 1,600 maybe unread emails. In my professional email box, much, much lower, maybe 10.
I have an old personal account via Yahoo that is now, it's like a continent that broke off and went into the ocean when I just had to give up from the spam. You know, it was overrun with companies that think that I need help with different maleness, and I just had to let it go. I mean, people will still email me once in a while and be like, I never heard back from you via the Yahoo. And I'm going, that one has 26,000 unread emails, but most of them are spam. So Listeners, if you want to share your thoughts about the way we communicate, what we're trying to do this hour is sort of identify the newness of getting rid of voicemail entirely. Are we done with that as a thing? How we communicate, where email fits in. Text as sort of a culture and what our expectations are. And what it says about us, because when we asked this question, some of our listeners didn't just tell us their thoughts about how long they take. They voiced either frustrations in different ways or observations about the way we communicate. And as an example, I was talking to someone this morning who I will not name because this was a private conversation, but this person is not Gen Z or millennial. In fact, they may not even, I think they're Gen X. And they were saying they like talking in person, but they don't even like talking on the phone anymore. So the notion of even seeing the phone ringing, or is it ring anymore, buzzing, whatever it does, causes anxiety. It's like, I don't want to talk to you, whoever you are. I'll talk to you if you're in person. Do we feel the way, MRA? Do you talk? Do you have phone conversations?
Phone conversations are actually my favorite medium of communication. I think that they're incredibly important in terms of being a small startup business owner. Having that, you know, contact with someone on the phone, being able to get someone on the phone is much more personal, and they're much less likely to ignore what you're saying and really take to heart your message. Whereas in an email or a text, again, they can just not respond or think, you know, this is just another person inquiring about something.
Okay. Do you talk on the phone, Anna?
On the phone. I do like the nonverbal aspect of being able to hear the other person and their tone and either sad or happy or excited about something. So yeah, that I would never replace that.
You wouldn't. So when you see the phone buzzing, you don't think, look, just text me if you got something
no.
to say. You're okay with that?
No.
Okay, Lise?
Depends on who it is. But I think
that's a good caveat.
I do. I love talking on the phone and hearing someone's voice, especially family that are far away.
Okay, Rashad?
Yeah, talking on the phone is key. There's a quote that says the human connection is the key to personal and career success. And so you have to be able to feel what people are talking about. And it often helps when you can see reactions, response, communication cues. And so talking on the phone is critical.
You've taught in a number of places. Do you think the students you teach agree with you there?
They may not agree, but I think that they would
wrong.
Understand. Yeah, yeah. And you know, for them, though, there are a bunch of memes on social media describing the way that we talk now versus the way that we talk, that we used to talk. And there's one particular meme, like a male and female couple, and they're hanging out. So you see this image of like the guy underneath the chair cushion in the refrigerator, laying across like a car, because I remember that's the way we really used to talk. And it would be for hours. Am I alone here? Like it would be
no.
that deep discussion on the phone, watching TV together, even movies together for hours. But that's not like that anymore.
I agree. I actually wish that more people in my life would FaceTime me and do that. Yeah.
FaceTime?
Yes.
Instead of call?
Yes.
I would agree with that. Yeah, I think that's something that my friends and I implement a lot. I have a lot of friends who live overseas, and we'll FaceTime each other a lot to stay in contact. And it gives, like you were saying, Rashad, that personal touch where you can see someone's emotions, hear the sounds mm-hmm. of their voice. It's very mm-hmm. meaningful.
So, by the way, right now, do you know what's actually happening? I'm blowing up with people saying, well, this is a perfect time to remind you that you never responded to X. This is really nice.
So just get ready for another 200 emails just because of this.
So I just want to say to Paul, who's listening right now, Paul just texted me saying, Evan, you even have a problem answering your phone when you are expecting a call, like a planned call. And Paul, I love you, and you're not wrong. I've got to do better. I owe you a little jam session. Paul in a past life played drums in a band I was in. So let's get together, Paul. You've got me now. You've got me. But I want to ask all of you, and I'm going to start with Anna on this, what this says about us as sort of, sort of creatures of communication. Because what we do know, at least what I think we know, and you all can weigh in on this, is there's way too many generalizations. For a while it was about millennials. Now it might be about Gen Z. Always being on their phone, not wanting to actually communicate directly with people. You know, it's the joke that everybody can be out to dinner or at a bar together, but everybody's on their phones, which interestingly enough, I think is a big overgeneralization. Definitely we're on our devices almost all the time, but people crave face-to-face communication. It's why coffee shops are exploding still. It's why, you know, bars are never going to go out of style because people want to be with each other face to face. It's this form of communication when we're not face to face that does seem to have changed and what our expectations are that govern that. And I want to ask all of you about what it says about us as a culture. Is this just, is it natural for the people wringing their hands or are annoyed? Is this just what we should expect? What do you think?
Well, I would challenge two notions. The first, I think it's a common thing that we've done historically. We've always blamed the younger generation for everything.
Absolutely.
Just to give you an example, I'm from Latin America, and my family there, especially my parents, my uncles, older generations, have this application called WhatsApp, and they are there constantly, all the time, every day. So if I go back home, I would see my mom and my dad on their phones because they're talking to their brothers, their sisters, cousins, whoever, and they're just looking at pictures and everything. Same with Facebook, for instance. So I don't just think it's the younger generations there. They're always constantly on their phones. The second notion that I would like to challenge is that people crave face-to-face interactions. I teach oral communication, and I think one of the things that I'm seeing is that lately, especially with younger generations, there's an anxiety that goes on with the idea that you're going to face-to-face have a conversation with a person. I think that because we've gotten used to texting and everything else, when you are confronted with this notion that you actually have to talk to somebody, the initial reaction is anxiety, right? Mm. I don't know where that comes from. Maybe because we spend more time on tablets than going outside and playing that we used to 20 years ago, 15 years ago. I don't know. But when it comes to technology and how technology has changed the way we communicate, I think we now communicate well faster, right? We're less reflexive about it. If I have a Twitter account, I'm just reacting to the news and whatever is that's happening. Whereas before, if I wanted to have this conversation with my mom, I would have to wait until we'd come back home. And by then, maybe my words would be different. And third, there are less boundaries. So, for example, my mom was a banker, and they knew that if something came out at work, they had to wait for her until the next day because there were no cell phones. Right now, it's perfectly acceptable for a boss to call me, even if it's not a quote appropriate time, or if it's night, or if it's Saturday, for instance. And I would add that the emphasis has changed. I think that technology has made communication about self-expression more than about communicating ideas. So if my goal was to communicate with MRA, I would have to consider what she thinks, how she thinks, her age, everything else to want to be able to communicate, which is what I do as her professor. But now it's about what I want to say in my blog, in my Facebook account, in my Twitter account. So I think that the emphasis there has changed, and therefore the rules.
So maybe consider the recipient of the communication.
Mm-hmm.
But you're still saying in your own life, your family's trained not to even leave you voicemail.
They did text, though.
That's good stuff. Elise, what do you think about what it says about us as a culture?
I think that it says that we are devaluing uninterrupted focus, and that we are trading that for instant accessibility. And I think that it really tells us that we need to work harder as individuals to create boundaries for ourselves early on in the way that we communicate and clearly communicate those boundaries with other people ahead of time, if possible.
That is a really interesting point on the notion of focused communication as opposed to quick hitting, always accessible, but maybe sugary, surface-level stuff.
Yes.
As opposed to with depth, which is a good point to grab our first call because Rich in Rochester wants to talk about when he makes long phone calls. When, Rich?
Well, I traveled to Canada. My girlfriend lives in Canada, so it's a 3 to 4 hour drive. And because of the phone, my service, I can call from Canada even free. So I have these long periods of time where I'm sitting there and I'm captive and I call the people that are important to me, have that 1 to 2 hour conversation, makes the trip go quicker. And even now with WhatsApp, my girlfriend now is in Europe. She can call me and we sit there and we do have these conversations. And also because she's in Canada, in the way we can communicate, I can have this relationship that's been ongoing for almost 15 years. Because now we can communicate every day, and the cost is no different. So we do have this captive audience. So there's a lot of strength to what is happening now and the way we can communicate.
Yeah, I think that's interesting, Rich, and I appreciate that little data point because, you know, when I think about long drives, or I'm usually kind of queuing up podcasts, but I actually do think that's a moment for me to go, wonder if I can reconnect with someone who I haven't really talked to much, I do care about, maybe we've been out of touch. Usually, though, I call, and they don't pick up. because they're not on a long drive. We have to time these things out. I like that, though, Rich. And I think that dovetails with Elise's point, though, that we're doing a little less of the actual long communication and talk, because we can be constantly distracted. And does that trouble you?
I think that what troubles me more is the accessibility piece and having it be the norm that you are always accessible, because sort of what Emma Ray was talking about with how it can kind of hurt our like relationships with mental health or not wanting to talk on the phone anymore. We really just are able to make connections with other people.
So on that subject of how things have changed, where is it? I'm going to find it. Somebody in this long thread of responses made an interesting point about ghosting, which is basically that one thing that's changed is you cannot ghost relationships anymore because you know that person can at least see your text messages or see your communication somehow. So if you want to break up, you can't just ghost it. You can't just go away for the summer and not respond to an actual answering machine message. I couldn't even remember. Kids, there are these things, and there was a box, and there was an actual tape that was on the box, and you could leave a message, and it was on the tape. And sometimes the tape just got eaten. You just lost the tape. You can't do that anymore. Do we agree? You can't ghost out of relationships? You actually have to confront somebody?
Yeah, I'd agree. You cannot ghost out of relationships. And primarily, social media has a large role in that. Because if I'm ghosting you, your phone calls, your text messages, and you see me post of a photo or a video or even just text, it's sort of like, hello, I've reached out to you 4 or 5 times, but I see you're at Miami Beach just living it up. Can I get a return call? And so I would agree.
Okay. Emma Ray?
I would definitely agree as well. I also think that going back to Elise's piece on accessibility, that people almost think that they have a right to know exactly what you're doing and why you aren't responding, and they immediately assume that you must be upset or perhaps there's something wrong because you're not responding, where maybe you're just having a good time in Miami Beach and you just don't feel like texting them back right now. So I definitely think that there's this immediacy that's extremely sought after by people.
So picking up on that point, you would caution all of us to not take it too personally if the response is slower than we'd like.
Absolutely.
I think that's really, really good advice, because from my perspective, there's a couple of things going on. This whole hour is actually just a Trojan horse for me to basically let people know that I'm not as bad of a person as you think if I haven't gotten back to you. It's not working, but I'm trying. So there's a couple of things. Even with a text message, sometimes I want to send something a little bit more substantive or thoughtful. And I think, I don't have time right now. I'm flying, getting ready for the show. It's like all of the communication comes in between 11 and noon. I'm always like, do people know that I host a show from noon to 2? And they're just like, hey, how's it going? And I'm like, ah. But sometimes I want to send something even more substantive to a text. So I tend to give it, I don't know. I'm going to break whatever rule I give, but I think 24 hours is fair, unless it's like really pressing, you need an answer to a scheduling something, et cetera. Then there's the question of what you have all done, and I'm sure I'm not the only one, who has been in a spot where you did ignore a text or an email and you had some anxiety about it and you felt terrible. And then the question is, how long do you go before you can readdress it where it's like, it's cool again? Like, what do you do about that? Have you had those moments where you're like, oh, I'm so sorry I didn't get back to you?
Absolutely.
You don't, Rashad.
I am not a perfect communicator. I have those moments quite often, and it's literally always legit reasons on why I did not respond, and I'm clear with that. I didn't respond because of this, but now that I am here, let's get this done. I have those moments quite often. So while my response rate is pretty good within that day's time period, even if it's something where, for example, so it's one thing to have a ton of emails, but if you have emails and you have to actually act on those emails, coordinate and work those emails out, that's an entire different thing. And so oftentimes I'll text or call someone or email them and say, hey, got your email. Give me a couple of days to really go through this.
That's good. I think that's really valuable. Elise, what have you done when you felt that anxiety of, oh man, I really should have gotten back? What do I do?
I think that it's important, at least in my life, that I don't always feel I need to give a reason. It depends on the situation. And I think that that goes back to my personal love for boundaries. but I do think that if it's really important and that you it's been long enough, and long enough to me would be over 2 days not responding to a text message, I need to tell someone why. Other than that, I just try and be myself. I try not to overuse sorry. One of my biggest pet peeves is receiving an email that says, oh, apologies for the late reply. And then that person is continuously inconsistent. And they always are saying, apologies for my late reply.
I think I'm that guy. I think I'm the guy who said apologies for the late reply, though. So you're telling me don't do that. Just reply.
I think you can do it if you're not overusing it with the same person all the time.
There's a lot of self-reflection going on here. Anna, what do you do if you've realized that you haven't gotten back to someone? Because there are people in our orbit who are friends. There are people who are on the border of friends and acquaintances. There are people who used to be closer friends who are not as close now, but we still may care about them.
Yes.
What do you do if you realize, ugh, I really should have gotten back to this person?
You know, there's a reason why I study communication. I'm not very good at it sometimes. So my thing is that I actually do feel a lot of guilt when I fail to respond to a text. And what has happened lately is that I respond, but I never actually send the text back. Because I got another email or a phone call or whatever, and it just stays there. And when I look back and it's there, I freak out. Mm-hmm. And then I just go into a guilt loop for days, and then I just don't ever get back to them. And it's
kind of hope that they move.
Kind of.
Lose your number.
And then when I finally get a phone call, I'm like, hey, I'm so sorry for the last time. You're not going to believe this, but I actually respond. Yeah, it's the worst.
Emery, what do you do?
Well, I think in terms of social obligations, I've been kind of known as the person who I love making connections. I love meeting people, and I'll get really excited and want to hang out with someone. And then I'll realize I have so many other things to do. And so maybe they'll say, hey, I really want to hang out. And then I'll forget to respond, sort of like all of you have been saying. But what I tend to do is really just express, you know, I think you're a great person. I would love to hang out sometime soon, but my schedule is quite busy right now. So maybe I'll get back to you sometime when I have a little more free time, because I never want to keep that up in the air, you know, that I can commit to a plan or I can commit to a project or something like that, that I can't, because my immediate thing is just to say, yes, I want to hang out. Yes, I want to join this project. Yes, I want to join this group. But I think it's very important to be able to prioritize what you're working on right now, the people that are already in your life and that have, you know, been strong friends to you, strong partners to you. So I think prioritizing has been something that's been very important to me.
So here's another good little lesson I'm taking from this hour. Don't be afraid to say no or no for now. Mm. And we should be better at receiving no or no for now. Because,
yes.
You know, for those listening who are afraid to say no or you know, to tell someone, hey, it's just not going to work for a while. But if you don't respond at all, that's probably worse than giving them a no.
Oh, absolutely. I think that it's so important to, you know, I never want people to feel like, oh, I don't care about them or anything like that. And I know for me personally, I would much rather have someone say, you know, hey, I'm so sorry. I've got a lot of things going on right now. I really value you as a person. But, you know, let's try to connect some other time for sure. That would mean a lot more to me.
So before we move in different directions with listener feedback, one more point on this thread to wrap it up on the question of when things have gone too long. So I was talking to Emery yesterday in the office about what I consider sort of this dead zone period. And here's what I mean by that. You get some kind of communication from somebody, maybe a voicemail, maybe an email, maybe a text. And, you know, you do want to maintain the relationship, but something happens and you don't. And then it's 2 days and then it's 2 weeks and then it like maybe 2 months. And you're like, I am the worst person who's ever lived. This person will probably move on without me in their lives. And they're probably telling everybody how bad I am. But what is the amount of time that needs to pass before you can then reach out and say, hey, some serious stuff's happened in my life, but I still care about you. I'm disappointed in myself, but let's rekindle this. Because I think 2 weeks is too little. 2 months may be too little. I had a 2-year situation where I had some personal turmoil in my own life. I wasn't on Facebook for like 3 years. And a friend of mine who is a great guy and I did a lot of work with, I was just out of touch. I mean, that kind of sometimes in personal turmoil situations, your circle gets smaller, and it just happened. And I'm responsible. But I reached out this week and I said, I love you and I am sorry about this. And if you don't want to sort of rekindle this friendship, I get it. But here's the deal. And he wrote back in about 6 minutes because he's like Rashad. He's amazing. And he said, I get it. I love you too. Let's talk. And it was amazing. And like this weight lifted, but you can't really do like 2 weeks is too little for that, right, Elise?
Yes, I would say for something like that, if you're going to leave it hanging, maybe a month, you know, is a little bit better.
Okay. See, yeah, all right. That's a month. It seems like I don't know. I mean, that even seems a little too little for me, given my own personal history. But I like that. Anna, you want to jump in there?
Yeah, I want to go back to Elise's point of not doing the same thing over and over. I think we've all had those situations where something's going on with our lives and we don't get back as soon as we want to. But I think that as long as we are able to go back and then prove that this is not consistent, right? That we that it was actually an exception.
Yeah.
And we actually work hard to prove that. I think that we're okay. No.
Yeah, I mean, but I think that's a good point. If you are going to rekindle, then you got to stay with
it. Yes.
Yeah. Otherwise, don't bother.
Right.
Because I've been on the other end of that, too. And it's like, what are we doing here? How long is acceptable for you before you go, mea culpa here, but let me kind of own up to this?
Well, you know, I also, Evan, think that it is on the responsibility. It's the responsibility of the person, too, the one who is trying to connect with you. If they notice that you are not communicating, they probably know you and who you are and what you have going on. And so it's on their, they should be the ones to say, you know what, let me reach out again. And another way that I can reach out is beyond an email. Maybe I'll text him. If Evan doesn't respond to my text this time, I'm giving him a call. And see, for me, I'm
scared of people like you. Yeah. You like hold me accountable.
Oh, I hold you accountable. And if it gets to the point where we're calling, when I leave a voicemail at that point, that's when you know it's serious.
That's like the only time you get a voicemail. Like, oh no.
Yeah.
It's a voicemail.
It's a voicemail.
Somebody either died or I'm about to die.
And I will tell you, I've emailed you, I've texted you, I've called you, and I still have no response. At that point, now we're breaking relationships.
That is such an important point. And actually, in our thread of responses online, somebody made the point of, if I get a voicemail, I respond faster than anything because I assume someone's died. And I'm going, oh my gosh, that's how rare we get voicemails these days.
Yeah, they're now more serious. Like something serious is happening with the voicemail, I think. And when I get to that point after I've communicated with you through all sources, social media, DMs, I have to leave a voicemail. I'm probably telling you, hey, do you still love me? Because I'm not quite sure. And so at that point, I'll expect some sort of response.
My twin brother called me this weekend and he's like, what's up with Mom? And I said, I don't know. What's going on with Mom? He said, she never does this. And she texted me, call me, period. With a period, which seems serious. Like call me, exclamation marks, like fun. Call me, period, seems serious. And he did, and she didn't answer. And he called me, and it's like, it turns out the answer was like nothing. Because my mother is still figuring out how to use emoji. My mom will voice text me.
Oh, gosh.
And half the voice text will be her talking to my stepfather saying, I don't think this is working. And then she sends the whole thing. And it's really good comedy. So my mom is still working on this. But that was like a scary moment. Yeah. It was like, she doesn't do this. So if something is different. So if Rashad actually leaves a voicemail, you damn well better listen to that and answer it because that's serious.
Yeah, I'm expecting a reply.
All right. Okay. See, we're making progress here. So after our only break of the hour, we're going to read some more of your feedback on this. And Frank, we're going to get to your email next because he's talking about people who do kind of what Rashad does, which is prod immediately. Did you get it? Did you get it? Did you get it? Is that inbound socially? Is that acceptable? How do we feel about Rashad's poking, holding people accountable? We're going to do that, and we're going to talk more about how our communication habits are changing with Rashad Smith, project manager for Shaping Our Stories at Causewave Community Partners. Ana Gomez Parga is an assistant professor in English and communication at Nazareth College. Elise Miklisch is a communication specialist at RIT and owner of Light Within Candle Company. And Emery Stein is a communications and history student at NAS, co-owner of Floated Magazine, and probably the best connections intern we've ever had. We're going to take that break and come right back. Coming up in our second hour, we talk to Rue Mapp, a woman who's coming to Rochester bringing her message and her story of African Americans in nature. Part of her work is devoted to bringing more African Americans into nature. She says the trees don't know that you're black or white, how much money you make, or what your background is. And she wants more people outdoors to build friendships and peace and understanding. We'll talk about it next time. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. We are peeling back the norms of communication and how things are changing. Frankly, how those of us who are more in the oldster category are trying to deal with Gen Z and millennials who communicate differently than we did. And whether you even like voicemail anymore, whether you even listen. So the question at the outset of the hour was this: what is the socially acceptable amount of time that a person should have to respond to a text message, an email, or a voicemail? Generally speaking, among our Gen Z millennial crowd, we've gotten dozens of responses. I would say the average says text message within 24 hours or less, and some people within just a few hours, email within 1 or 2 days, and voicemail between a day and never. That's the roughly the window that we're getting of responses. So just know that if you're leaving voicemail and you're wondering why you're not, no one's getting back to you, no one's listening. That's just probably the reality. And I don't mean that to be rude. I'm listening to the people who are telling me they are not listening to my voicemail. I've been that guy who's like, hey, did you get my voicemail? And they're like, no, nobody listens to that. What are you doing? But we've had a couple of people write to us on different sides of what Rashad's talking about, which is some people have been writing in to tell us that they consistently prod someone. So if a friend doesn't get back to a text within a few hours or a day, they text again. They'll say bump or, you know, some kind of an emoji or hey, and then all caps, hey. other people say that they feel like that's rude. Like, hey, I got it. I'll get back to you when I got time. And now you're starting to seem like you're demanding of my time. It's probably situationally dependent, but where do you fall on that, MRA?
If someone did that, I'd be extremely annoyed, I think. To be honest, especially in a personal situation, you know, sometimes friends will be funny, you know, and they'll send you a couple things like, yo, I thought we were gonna hang out, what's up? And I get that, you know, that's fine. But if, you know, you're texting me and I don't know you very well, perhaps, or something like that, or you're trying to get me to look at something, I think that's a lot. If you're texting one reminder, acceptable, 100%, that's okay. But any more than one reminder is really a lot, I think.
Okay, Anna?
I'm 100% with Emery on this one. Everything she just said.
Okay, Elise.
Yeah, you definitely need to be respectful of people's time. Mm-hmm. I think I could do better with this in my personal relationship, though. I definitely am prodding sometimes when I'm not sure what you're up to and want to know what you're doing. So I think I need to dish it out and be able to take it.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Rashad?
So let me just sort of defend myself here. You know, so I'm not expecting to do all this communication in one day. So if it's someone like Evan who hasn't responded to my emails in 2 weeks, sorry, Evan.
This is such a painful hour. Bearing my soul here.
Then I'll go to the next step. If it's another couple of days, and it, particularly if it's something urgent. And then again, I'm in the business of pitching. And so oftentimes when you receive no response, that means your pitch hasn't been accepted. However, it may just mean that it's been lost in communication. And so you want to make sure that you stay in front of someone's face.
Okay, fair enough. Well, one of my friends had just texted me to do better. I just wrote back, new phone, who dis? So look, I'm going to get back to everybody. I'm going to do better. I am going to do better. Alex writes to us, and this is interesting. Alex says, I think you're missing one part of communication, and that's the dating scene. If I don't respond to a text message or some kind of a communication with someone who wants to go out, I get seriously annoyed if they write back, and I get seriously concerned if they continue. That's not cool. And yes, this is mostly for the men in the audience. That's from Alex. Okay, let's ask the woman. Yes or no? MRA?
So is he, I'm sorry.
Alex is a she.
Okay.
And is saying, Alex gets annoyed and then concerned if a man, usually a man, Alex is saying, is asking in a dating context and then gets no response and then keeps coming at you.
Oh, yeah, that's extremely concerning. If I'm not responding in a dating context, I'd assume that, you know, you'd kind of get the point that the communication has ended, especially if we've only gone on one date or maybe even none.
Yeah. Okay, Anna?
Yeah, I mean, it's about who you're talking to. If this was someone, a complete stranger, I would be concerned. But I get absolutely your point. Well, just to give a personal example, I was in one of those moments where I was not getting back to my messages and I was not texting back one of my friends. And she just called me and said, look, you even tell me what's going on or I'm taking a plane to go see you because I'm concerned about you. And then I just said, I'm so sorry. I'm busy. I got caught up with work, whatever, moving forward. But no, it absolutely depends on who's a person on the other side.
Yeah, a context dependent here. Elise, what would you say about Alex's point about the dating scene there?
It's hard. I think that if someone is not responding to you and you went out on a date with them, they don't want to go out on a second date.
In a way, that is them responding to you.
Yes. Fair? And I think that sometimes as I won't make this a gender thing, but I sometimes would feel pressured to give that person an explanation. And it's harder to give that person an explanation because then they can start to persuade you otherwise or continue to prod you and pick apart your argument as to why you don't want to go out with them anymore. Whereas just ghosting them altogether kind of takes that problem away from you.
So this is where ghosting can actually happen. If it's sort of someone is asking you out, you have no obligation to respond. And if you don't respond, they're not owed an answer on this. Is that fair?
Correct.
Okay. Just let me just say to Alex's point, Alex thinks it's mostly guys who are struggling with this. Small sample size, my own life and knowing people and having friends who are women who have shared stuff. But I'm down with that point. Nobody owes you any explanation. If they don't want to go out, they don't have to respond. And I think the notion of following up is weird. Now, if you've been in a relationship, you probably don't deserve or know. They want to end it, they can end it. But I understand wanting to follow up and say, hey, help me see this, as opposed to letting it go immediately. Mm-hmm. At some point, it becomes harassment, but probably there's a little more leeway at the end of a relationship versus you're not in a relationship and this person does not deserve a response. Okay. Do you agree with that?
I think I would agree with it. But see, as communicators, I think that we just sort of owe it to the recipient to communicate to them. Like, I need to know clearly, is it working? Is it not? Yes, no. And I'll probably even ask that. Is this the way that we're going or no? Tell me and I'll know that I don't need to contact you. So it's really weird. So I'm two examples here. So if you're on a date and you're having a good time and then you end the date and you go home and the next morning you text that person and say, hey, how's it going? And you get no response. It's kind of like, well, what the heck did I do? What went wrong? And you really want to know it, particularly if you are really interested in someone. And then I think it even becomes more weird if that communication stops. And let's say you see this person in public. And now it's sort of like this weird big pink elephant in the room.
But you only went out one time. I mean, like, you know, maybe you thought it was a good time. Maybe they didn't. They don't owe you, do they?
Yeah, no, not on a one-time thing. If it could be a a date or a number of weeks.
I think if there's multiple, it's fair to at least ask, hey, I respect you, but did I do something wrong? I think that's probably fine.
Mm-hmm.
But if you still get no response, I think you got
to
let
then
it
you
go.
Need to, yeah, you need to pick up the pieces and figure it out.
I think it's different, too, if someone is asking or if they are just poking you, saying, hey, 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 and coming out and asking and being a good communicator.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not talking about ends of relationships here, just to be clear. And I don't think Alex was either. Alex, thank you for the email. Bob from Lima says, good topic. And I suggest a brief discussion on business calls not getting returned and a failure to update even professional websites. Well, I don't know where the website thing comes in, Bob. I mean, I think it's good to try to stay on top of that. I think it's a bad sign if someone says, hey, check out my work or whatever, and it looks like it hasn't been updated in forever, like my writing website, which hasn't been touched in years. So thank you, Bob. Again, this is all about how I failed this out. But on the business side, is it different? How do you feel about business communication?
I think business communication needs to be very high priority. If I get a business call, I will always call back within the day unless it's after business hours. And I think that in the case of if I call someone and they don't answer and then I never get a call back from them, or if I don't get a call back within a week or perhaps they take like 7 days to get back, I find that almost kind of disrespectful, especially if we're working on something together, because it's difficult when you're working collaboratively on a project and you can't get in touch with someone, especially with all these different modes of communication that we have now. You know, a call back even just to say, like Rashad was saying, you know, I don't have the time to talk about this right now, but I'm going to mull over it and I'll give you a call back in 3 days. That's super important, I think, if you're working on a project with someone.
I think that's very well said. What would you say to that, Anna, on the business side?
When it comes to business, for me, it's about efficiency and being effective. And in order for me to be both things, I need boundaries. So if I'm talking, like, this is where having different accounts comes into play. For me, it's just one account for my students and work specifically. So for me, I will respond to that on a daily basis. And I because I do get a lot of emails and everything, questions. So every day in the morning from this hour to this time, I will be responding specifically to emails. And then the next day, the same thing. But when it comes to Saturday and Sunday, you cannot reach me. So that way, that allows me to do whatever else needs to be done so that I can come back to it on Monday. But I mean, as long as I have clear boundaries. But one thing that you said before about this gender dynamic between being concerned, and I just wanted to say thanks. You seem to be very open when people come to you and say, hey, right now, this is not working. I don't want to go on a second date, whatever. But I think that what Alex was trying to say is there are men who are not as responsive to no. So it's safer for us as women to say, I'm just not going to respond to that text.
Yeah. Interesting.
So, yeah.
I think that's good perspective. Elise, how do you feel about the business side of communication? Different standard?
Yes, super high priority. Business calls for me would be returned within 24 hours. I am not necessarily someone that gets a super high volume of calls during my day-to-day. It's a little bit different for my small business. I probably wouldn't get any phone calls unless I'm doing some sort of collaborative work. But I definitely don't think people should disregard the power of the holding statement of that 5-minute rule of saying, if you can just, I'll get back to you. Just exactly what Emma Ray said.
Okay. Rashad? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So totally different from business. And it sort of kind of mixes for me, business and personal. Anna, for you, you don't respond on weekends. I'm always responding. I'm even responding 12, 1, 2, 3 in the morning. And so I know that's an entirely different sort of topic there. What's appropriate? How do I respond? When do I respond? So one of the things that I do try to do with business communication, particularly email, I'll draft an email at 3-4 in the morning and I'll sort of schedule to send it out. Or it depends on who it is. If I know that I have some sort of beyond business relationship with the person and we have a goal to accomplish, I have no problem shooting an email at 4:30 in the morning. I don't expect you to look at it then, but I know that you'll get it. And it stands out because no one else is sending you emails at that time.
Well, speaking of when you expect someone to read it, John in Pittsford wants to know, how do the guests feel about read receipts?
I hate them.
They're terrible, yeah.
Why are they terrible?
Well, I think that it's... Okay, so I have mixed feelings on it. In one sense, I like to know when someone's read my message,
right.
But in the same way, then it creates that sense of immediacy that we were talking about before, and all those implications about why the person hasn't answered comes back. So the read receipt's on for 3 hours, and you're thinking, wow. You've been looking at this message and thinking about it, but you haven't responded. Why? So it creates all these sort of
feels like
judgments.
It's a little policing your time kind
policing
of thing.
Policing your time, exactly. When, you know, it's upsetting that we have these expectations of people to respond that quickly, but the red receipts really do sort of put that stamp of you read this and you didn't answer. Why?
Anybody disagree? We're all on board. We're throwing out the read or red receipts there.
Mm-hmm.
It's socially unacceptable.
Yeah, I too like to see when folks have read my messages. But I don't want them to see mine.
Exactly. Yeah.
It kind of sets you up for failure.
Yeah.
I love how the standards of this. And we do have a number of people who have responded to our posts on Twitter saying that they're really surprised at how younger people in general won't listen to voicemails. And some are saying that is annoying or rude. That, come on, you got to listen to voicemails. That's someone who cares about you. Kind of get over it and listen. No, we're not. What do you say to our listeners who are thinking, that sounds rude?
If my mom left me a voicemail, I'd listen to it. But if some, 823 area code leaves me a voicemail, I'm not going to think that they're caring about me. I'm probably, like you said, Evan, going to think it's spam. Maybe I'll think it's the doctor's office or I'll just give it a quick call back. But I mean, if someone who cares about me left a voicemail, of course I'll listen to it. It's probably something important.
Okay, Anna?
I don't think it's rule, especially because I let them know. I mean, in my message, I say, do not leave me one. If you really want to contact me, just text me.
That's actually a really important point. If we are not going to even listen to voicemails,
yes.
In our away message, we should probably let someone know, hey, if you leave a message, I may not even hear it.
Yes.
Okay. Mm. That's a good etiquette point there.
Okay. Thank you.
I'm thinking for myself because I get lax sometimes, both on the business side and the personal side of kind of staying on top of voicemail. And I'm not sure I have that message, and I'm changing that today. That's a good one. Is it rude, at least, to our listeners who think it's rude that these young adults won't even listen to voicemails?
I think that we do listen to voicemails. We just don't physically listen. We read the transcription. That's what
Which
I
is
do.
Which is not always on the money. But, yeah.
Exactly. But you can get the point of what someone is trying to say. And I do want to make a point for younger people, too, is that when it's your parents and your friends, I do listen to those voicemails. I'll even go so far as saving them. I have voicemails from my dad or my mom from years ago that I will save to be able to listen to again. And they're both still, thankfully, here.
That is a beautiful thing. Had a neighbor pass away recently and left me the most beautiful voicemail about my son, and I'm never going to get rid of that one.
Yeah.
It's an amazing thing. So that's a beautiful one. Real quick, Rashad, what would you say about the idea that it's rude not to even listen or want to listen to voicemails?
No, I almost think it's rude to leave one. you know, my grandmother will call me. She's 93, and so she'll call. And so when she leaves a voicemail, absolutely, I'm checking it. I see the number. I don't think it's rude. And for me, I want to be accessible to the folks that I collaborate with. And so I don't think that I would ever say, do not leave a voicemail just because I need folks to be able to have access to me in all ways. No, don't think it's rude, but think twice before you send one.
I'm really grateful for this hour of conversation because truly, for me, I've joked that this is like bearing my soul and owning up to my failures. And I mean that. I want to be accountable that I can do better with this. But there's some really good ideas on how to do it better. And I want to thank our guests for being here. Ana Gomez Parga, professor in English and communication at Nazareth College. I'm changing my voicemail away message.
Good. You're welcome.
And thanks among other great insight this hour. Emma Ray Stein, we'll see you back here tomorrow as a Connections intern.
For sure.
And the co-owner of Floated Magazine, thanks to Elise Miklich, who's a communication specialist at RIT and owner of Light Within Candle. Great having you. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
Rashad Smith, among many titles, is a project manager for Shaping Our Stories at Causewave Community Partners. Thank you, sir.
Thank you,
what are you
Evan.
Doing to me?
Just recording you a little bit.
More Connections coming up.